Recording in progress.
Dr. Moore, here for Dr. Ken Morton, Division of Higher Education.
Ross White, Director of the Division of Career Technical Education, Department of Education.
Katie Malieva, Department of Education.
Cody Waits, Director of Division of Workforce Connections, Department of Commerce.
Jeff Markison with Napples.
Chris Carson, Remington Ammunition.
I'm Kevin Tipton with Dreamline Manufacturing.
Very good. Well, Kevin, I'm going to turn it over to you for our first action item.
Thank you all for being here today and for your time to join us. First thing we need to do is, can I get a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Sound good. Can I get a name? They need to jot
yes,
names
you
down there.
Yes, he would repeat it. Yes. Jeff?
Jeff, motion.
And Lynn, seconded.
Well, so our second agenda item that we've got for today, I'm sorry, I apologize.
Okay.
So we've got a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Okay. You guys got to meet Scott Anderson at our first meeting. So Forge Institute is one of our partners in workforce, particularly in cyber. They did a presentation on AI the last time they were here. 2.5 years ago, this board, we had a shark tank, and they were the sharks. And so everybody had proposals for workforce, and Forge was actually one of the awardees. It was a 3-year commitment of $560,000 per year to do cybersecurity. And so they are in their third year. So in the coming months, they'll be doing a report on their final outcomes of the $1.6 million award. In addition to that, Scott came to me last October and wanted to talk about SkillBridge and how Forge could bring people who were transitioning out of the military into Arkansas and into the workforce. So we granted them $450,000 to bring 50 folks into the state of Arkansas who were transitioning out of the military. So I asked Scott to come and do a presentation, and he's brought some actual SkillBridge trainees who are going to be entering our workforce. So I'm going to turn it over to my friend and colleague, Scott Anderson.
Thank you, Stephanie. I appreciate y'all's time. We did pass around under your books is some information. I'm going to start off talking about just the SkillBridge program to kind of bring you up to speed on what that looks like with the DoD. And then I'll talk about like what Forge is doing, and then we'll have the pleasure of meeting some of the Forge fellows that are still active duty military right now. So the SkillBridge program is a program under the Department of Defense. Participants can start about a year out from separating, and that's people that have just done 4 years, 6 years, or retired, right? There's also ways that other people in special circumstances can do SkillBridge, but that's the majority of the people are transitioning out. That process starts about a year out. So within the last 6 months, they can go do an unpaid internship, apprentice, or on-the-job training to get ready for a civilian job. I did it. So I did 24 years Air Force, retired out of the Air National Guard here in Arkansas. And I did SkillBridge, but not with Forge. I did it with New Life Church in Conway. And helped with school ministry and some other stuff up there. And then when I got a job of offer at Forge, I said, hey, we should do this SkillBridge thing. And that's kind of what started the program. And the goal is to assist people as they transition out, right? So there's some numbers that are on some of the sheets of how many people transition out every year, right? So this little trifold talks about the program. Any organization can sign up. There are some great organizations in Arkansas. I think there's about 50 listed on the website, the SkillBridge website. We have helped a couple organizations apply for that because I think veterans bring a lot of value to organizations. Obviously being one, but I've worked with a lot of veterans. And so the program allows them to transition out and get some job experience and launch them into a successful career. And that's the goal of it. Within that last 6 months, they also have terminal leave. They have other things that they're doing. Sometimes there's permissive TDYs, if you're not familiar. It allows them to figure out, you know, where they're going to buy a house if they're transitioning out. Everybody's transition is different because some people have dependents, some people don't. Some people have special kids with special needs, some people don't. I think it's just figuring out what works good for them. And then the program actually allows organizations, I don't say try before you buy, but it actually allows them to bring them into their company and see if they're a good fit and develop them. So the way Forge has implemented this is we've done it across the state to support industries in Arkansas, but we've also done it nationwide. So the goal was flexibility. There's a little flyer on how Forge is doing its fellowship. And then additional information, a couple of testimonies on the back. But the goal is to be flexible enough to meet the needs. Not all these people are coming in and doing cyber stuff, right? That's what Forge focuses on a lot. A lot of people want to get into cyber, but then as they look into it, they're like, well, maybe I want to do project management, program management. Maybe I want to do marketing and sales. And like everybody's pathway looks different. So we put them to work within Forge. But we also partnered with Arkansas Industry, and that's kind of the objective of the grant with OSD is to help organizations either become SkillBridge or they can be SkillBridge partner directly with Forge. We've had people now going to Axiom. NavHoltz, I think, just started somebody within the last week or starting this week. I have to look at the date. Performance Engines in Little Rock. There's an aerospace company in Hot Springs that has hired a fellow. We actually have one of the people that I'll introduce or that will introduce themselves is actually here at Commerce supporting retired Gator, if anybody knows Gator. Probably nope. At some point you've met Gator. You know if you met him. But he was my commander when I was in, and we worked closely with him in the past. So the goal is to make Arkansas the home for transitioning service members. So we've done outreach with other transitioning service programs. Little Rock Air Force Base, obviously, that's the biggest active duty presence. And so I'll add that as well. So for people to do SkillBridge, they have to be active duty. So there are Guard members that are active duty. They're eligible to do it. But sometimes there's issues on higher ranked people because of control grades. And like I said, everybody's different. And it's kind of figuring out a program that works for everyone. So I'm not even going to talk to the slides because I think everything that's on the slides is on those flyers in front of you that you can take with you. I want to introduce our fellows that are here today.
Scott, before we get that, can I ask, what is the advantage to a company becoming a SkillBridge company?
I would say that coming out of the DoD, it's hard to work with the DoD sometimes. So I would say a disadvantage of it is having to maintain all the requirements that the DoD puts on its SkillBridge providers. It used to be you could do it with anybody. Now you have to be like designated, and they do an MOU with the organization. I think the goal with us is, we want as many Arkansas companies to do that. But I think because that is so challenged, some of the smaller companies that don't have like people that can maintain those records or maintain all the documentation the DoD requires, that Forge can be the conduit to do that. And no other state has done that. And I think it's a great program. Another advantage is some organizations are very strict on, hey, you have to start with this cohort, if that makes sense, right? So they only do it twice a year. And so if their transition doesn't line up with that, then they can't go through that program. So Forge has built a program that's very flexible that we can work with any industry. So in regards to signing up, I encourage companies to do it, but like working with the government, it can be a pain. But there's also benefits that they can take advantage of while they're doing SkillBridge, and that's using some of the veteran benefits for education. I think we talked about the cool stuff, and there's other, which pays for non-accredited certifications. There's just requirements about how the VA does all that while people are in their transition. And I hope I answered your question.
Yeah. One of the things that I've always recognized about Skills Bridge and other things, right, is I won't name the chamber, but I did a chamber conversation one day and asked the question, how many people in the room would hire veterans, right? Everyone's hand went up, right? I said, how many of you leverage or know what Skills Bridge is? Everyone's hand went down,
yeah,
with the exception, I think, one.
Right.
And so I guess my question to you all is, and maybe just at a broader, you know, effort for everyone in the room is, what are you all doing to spread that awareness to businesses that you all are doing this and that you are trying to act in this kind of intermediary capacity or as kind of a pass-through or at least an entity that can operate on behalf of them so they're not having to do it and become an organization with DOD specifically?
Right.
And then just at a broader level, what can we be doing better to expose businesses and companies to the opportunities that this provides?
I think it's all about sharing information. We leverage channel partners and have since we started, right? So our channel partners are associations, business associations, professional organizations. They need to be informed about what SkillBridge is, but also how they can partner with Forge, I think, because that benefits the state. But in regards to awareness, I don't think people truly understand the benefits of it. And personally, this isn't really Forge per se, is veterans are people like anybody else, right? So there are good, there are bad. I would say that there are opportunities for them to prioritize this, that they're not really doing it. And we have to look at both sides, right? So we have to look at working with industry, like how do we sell veterans as a good employee? But then at the same time, we have to figure out how to recruit those transitioning service members to either come home to Arkansas or this is where you want to live. So I think there's some efforts here. I know Gators talked to some people probably in this building about some of that stuff. And one of our fellows is helping out with that as well. I'm pretty sure this is a priority of the governor's office. So I've talked to Nick Ortiz over there about some of the veteran benefits. And I know I'm probably skirting some of your question, but I think what we need to do is make Arkansas the best place for veterans to live. And then companies need to understand what value they bring to an organization. And we probably don't do that well enough. Always ways you can improve it, I think. Yes, sir.
I will say I think this is wonderful, and thank you for your service. If this board can do anything to help you promote or expand that awareness, I think we'd be glad to do so. So if there's any needs you have on our behalf, whether it be within statewide or however we can link that up with other companies, please feel free to share. Because I think the awareness of this is very important.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I do serve on a veteran suicide awareness. It's not an awareness, it's a response organization. I think a lot of veterans don't see their purpose when they transition out. So I think there's another aspect of this is veterans don't always feel welcome sometimes in their community, especially when they're moving to rural communities. I think there's ways they can serve. And I think if we can give them more purpose, get them involved in organizations and kind of help them network and build relationships, I think we'll also help some of the veterans that may be struggling around.
Well, I'm sorry that they feel that because I know from our company's standpoint,
it's not all, yeah.
We jump for the opportunity to hire a veteran. We absolutely understand the value and
yeah,
the skills that you guys bring to any career. So,
right. We appreciate that. And I think there's always ways you can do things better. I think it's just identifying that.
Are you guys, the state is working on a talent attraction campaign that was done at the governor's office last week, and we're really using veterans as sort of the first cohort to really try to market to. But is Forge kind of connect, are they connecting at a minimum with chambers that are around Fort Smith and the Little Rock Air Force Base, so all those chambers and their respective members know about the opportunity the Skills Bridge can provide.
I talked to my chamber. Talked to the state chamber. I think it's about distributing that messaging out.
Yeah,
that could be better, and making it easy. So, like I said, I encourage all businesses to sign up for Skills Bridge, but the easy button is to advertise a job, and we're working on this right now. So if I've told companies that we're working with, if you have an open job in Arkansas on Indeed or LinkedIn, wherever you're advertising it, put that, hey, if you're a transitioning service member and you want to be considered for this job, apply for this fellowship. Because then all they have to do is click apply and they can hopefully do SkillBridge. And it's really just getting the word out to do that. So we're trying to figure out, we're using our channel partners, like I mentioned, to say, hey, if you have jobs open in the state of Arkansas, just put this little paragraph at the end. Say, if you're active duty military and you want to do SkillBridge in this position, apply for the Force Fellowship. It's that easy. And then we just launch them into that job once they get through it. Now it's a process, right? Because they can start a year out. So it might not be right away. But we've had companies call us and say, hey, that aren't doing SkillBridge. And they said, we had this person that wants to come on board and do SkillBridge with us. But we're not a SkillBridge provider. Can you guys fill that need? And it's absolutely. Just send us the information and we'll do an MOU and put them to work.
And just for this board's knowledge, so the way we did this MOU and this grant funding is it's based on outcomes. So we forwarded them a portion of the grant, but they will not receive they will receive based on the completers of 50 completers. And Scott always says he is an optimist and he knows he's going to be able to hire these 50 folks. And I can't agree with him more. I'm excited to see the progress.
And not just that, but because the lengthy timeline, the numbers have grown since we started this program. And I would say that when we hit the 50 mark by the end of this MOU, we're going to have 100 in the pipeline because it's scaling that much. I'm excited for the state of Arkansas to do this.
Well, let's meet one of your.
Yeah.
Hi, everyone. My name is Amanda. So I'm originally from California, but I've been stationed here at Little Rock Air Force Base. I did air traffic control for 6 years. So in the Porch Fellowship, I'm looking to do project management and I've been doing program management. So I really like the SkillBridge program because as an air traffic controller, you know, that's a very specific skill set. And going into a new career field, it's kind of scary with, you know, not knowing what applies to the outside and the civilian life. The military life is very different, you know, the lifestyle and stuff. So this program has helped me kind of transition just all around and skills, lifestyle, everything. So.
So what do we have to do to keep you here?
Oh, you're not leaving.
I don't know. It's a great place. I love it. I love the trees. I know that's on its own, but I love that it's, you know, very natural here. And where I'm from in California, there's not a lot. It's kind of hard to keep the grass green. So it's nice here. I like it.
I'm just curious. You mentioned you were doing air traffic controlling. Seems like that would be a natural transition as well. So maybe why not? You just ready to get out of that, do something different?
Yeah. So I love air traffic control. It's awesome. I love the job. And honestly, I loved being a supervisor. Those are like my favorite things. But coming out, I think that I just wanted to try something new because they were just kind of getting to a point where I'm like, you know, I think I could use these skills for something else and kind of, you know, challenge myself in a different way. So it was just kind of a personal choice to want to move to something new.
Could you speak more towards what you're doing, the Forge Fellowship? Because I know a lot about the Forge Fellowship, but it's usually folks going through some type of cyber training. So what are you, can you speak more to what actual training you're doing?
Yeah, so originally, because I wasn't really sure exactly what I wanted to do with project management because it's very vast. There's a lot of things you can do with project management. So when I got to the fellowship or when I got to Forge, they were like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I'm not really sure, but this is what I can do. This is what I know. And this is kind of where I want to be. So actually, even though I'm in the fellowship, I work with the fellowship division. And I think the coolest part for me, because like Scott was saying with the whole Veterans Initiative and everything, I like how we can bridge that gap because SkillBridge is available and it's a thing and a lot of people don't know about that. So in the fellowship, like what we're trying to do is make sure that companies know, hey, we'll do that middle ground, we'll be that middleman for veterans on that side too, saying, hey, there's these jobs, let us do the work to help you kind of match to what you want to do. So it's easy on both sides, because coming out and transitioning out, that was the hardest part, is like, where do I fit in? Where do I go? Everyone's usually very welcoming to veterans, but it's kind of hard to find where that spot is, because you know what you're good at and you know what you know, but you don't know what you don't know on the outside. So that's been my experience and kind of doing the program that I'm part of now, because I don't know, I felt very, very passionate about the transition and everything and helping people, you know, get to where they're meant to be.
So another cool thing about the fellowship is we realized when we first started it that the fellows start helping each other. So some of the transitioning things are learning how to speak private sector. I'm still learning, and I've been out for 4 years. But there's different challenges they have. If they're moving or if they're buying a house or if they're working with the VA to do stuff, like the veterans are helping each other when they're in the fellowship. And I think that's just a perk. One of the requirements when we send people out to other organizations is they still have to be part of a weekly check-in, because we want to hear how things are going. And we also want to make sure that, hey, are you having any other challenges as you transition out of the military?
And actually, Euland, he was one of my airmen at the tower, and he had the same thing.
Hey, everybody, I'm Euland Cunningham. I'm a part of the Skill Bridge program as well, and I'm in the academy part of Forge. And in the academy part, basically, they help train and upskill civilians to learn a skill, and so we can apply that to like jobs and in a career. I was working with air traffic control as well. And I think with Skill Bridge, it has helped me navigate my transition, because I didn't really know what I wanted to do, like getting out the military. I didn't want to do air traffic control. I like the job, but kind of like Mandy, I wanted to do something kind of different, and I wanted to just get as much under my belt as I can, as much experience. I always like computers, so that's what I'm doing now with Skill, with Forge. I'm doing entry-level IT. And so, yeah, just doing that training and stuff like that, like it's just helped me just open my mind up to different things. And they have so many different things that you can do within Forge. So like how Scott was saying, like marketing, Amanda's doing program management, I'm doing IT. It's like different things like that. Basically, like if you're doing a certain thing and like you see like it's not for you, they have opportunities to where like you can get into another career field, learn another skill. So I'm liking my time at Forge and just the Skill Bridge process.
Yeah. I think part of it's the translation of what they did in the military to how that relates to a civilian job. So it's updating resumes, LinkedIn. Both of them were air traffic controllers. So I know the Air Force, I don't know how the other components do it, but they've been doing the apprenticeship model since they started, right? And so that's a great program when you look at kind of workforce development, but they don't understand necessarily how corporations do internal training and kind of that value they bring. She was a trainer, so also bringing that knowledge into whatever department you're working on, right? Because understanding how you do that internal training and then other professional development is essential to any career progression.
Yeah, and honestly, half the battle is just translating, okay, this is what I did. I know how to train. I know how to do evaluations. I know how to run a team, but then I don't know even what the words look like on the outside in corporate, you know, or just on the outside. So it's always just that middle part that's like, this is what we can do, but where, how do we communicate that and how do we show that on our resumes when we go into interviews, everything, just knowing how to, I guess, communicate our skills and whatnot.
Scott, just from a frame of reference in terms of scale, what if you had to look 5 years down the road, what numerically, what's our upside in Central Arkansas for being able to grow the number of retired, I guess, So that's the right term. Yeah, retired or transition to Central Arkansas. Is that 1,500?
I would say I wouldn't restrict it to Central Arkansas.
Okay.
There are a lot of people transitioning out of the military that live in Northwest Arkansas.
True.
Or are moving to Northwest Arkansas.
True.
For multiple reasons.
Yeah.
I would say it's in the thousands.
Wow.
I mean, there's thousands. There's, I don't remember the number, 20,000 people that transition out of the service every year
in Arkansas.
No, not in Arkansas. Yeah. I'll have to get the number for you.
Yeah.
That changes.
90 a month come out of Little Rock Air Force Base.
90 a month, right? Yeah. And so I think there's some discussion to have about, all right, how many active duty members in Arkansas? And I don't want the information because I don't want PII, but the state could message active duty military members that are currently serving in the government or serving in the DOD, hey, move back to Arkansas. Here's an opportunity. Here are some jobs you can qualify for. Like, they could get that now while they're in. But the state has that data somewhere, I'm sure.
We had worked with Gator on this a while back in terms of there was a couple thousand people that we had looked at that were transitioning out of the military that are living in the state of Arkansas, perhaps not from the state of Arkansas, but that were stationed here. Likewise, we were talking about how do we then target those individuals who are from Arkansas but stationed somewhere else to try to lure them back.
Right.
Now, I don't know exactly, you know, what that big number looks like, but that's certainly something that
is
we can take as an action item to start to provide some data on.
That's actually part of that talent attraction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've had dozens of people just word of mouth because they know someone whose son or daughter is active duty, like in Hawaii. I just talked to a guy last week who's transitioning out and thinking about moving back to Arkansas because it's where he's from. But he said, wherever I get a job, I said, well, send me your resume. I can push that out to some people. And if you're going to say, if you want to do Stillbridge, let me know.
It seems like we passed a tax credit in Arkansas during the previous administration to try and attract. Does anybody know if that's had any impact?
Exemption.
Okay.
It's a retirement benefits
exemption,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know, has that had any impact in attracting folks?
I don't know the numbers, but I'm assuming it did. It puts you up there with some other states that do. I think we're 8th or 9th, maybe, in kind of positive veteran. I'd like to be 1 or 2, but.
Stephanie, you mentioned the outcomes. This says 92 graduates. I mean, what we're really looking for is transitioning military individuals getting jobs.
Yes, and that's what our outcomes are based on. So Scott is well aware because I sent him a little, I poked him about a month ago and said, you know, how many and where are they employed? And so he gave me that information. And so
is that 92 employed? Is that what that graduates mean?
So that's graduates across the country. So it's a smaller number on the state of Arkansas. I can get that to you. I don't have it in my pocket. But we have that.
At the end of the day, that's the objective.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Josh.
Josh Rhodes. I was a F-35 specialist out at Nellis Air Force Base. I skill bridged through Forge. I was there for a while. I started out doing cyber with them, realized pretty quickly that I didn't like computers as much as I thought. I like talking to people more. So I pivoted to project management with them for a little bit. And then I met through Forge, I met Colonel Ader, and Colonel Ader brought me over here. Some of you might have seen the face around the building. I am now over here on the 6th floor working for Colonel Ader. Underneath that, we're working on the home base website and soon to boot up a program with Forge about getting SkillBridge, getting the word out, essentially, like we were talking about earlier.
Thank you, Scott. Do you have anything else you want to conclude with?
No, I just appreciate y'all's time. Reach out for sure if you have any questions about SkillBridge or about the fellowships. We have a great relationship with the base, so if somebody wants to talk to them and kind of build relationships there, we can do that as well. So any other questions for y'all? Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Scott.
No problem. Thank
you. All right. All right. The next item is an information item. It's a director's report, and I had a pretty long conversation with Senator English yesterday morning. And so I'm going to invite her to any time that she wants to jump in here. But one of the things that Danny asked at our first meeting is he said, what exactly does this board do? And so we made a little one-pager here with some of the duties of the board. Also, the legislation that created this agency. Young lady right here that I just handed the paper to had the idea to create the Office of Skills Development. And so I just kind of wanted to go over some of that with you guys. So one of the main things that you do is direct all of the workforce in the state. And so when I talked to Senator English yesterday, she kept repeating this. She kept saying, it's got to be industry-led. We've got to know what these guys said, what they need. And so this is just a little one-pager. And I wanted to point out to you that in the legislation, it actually mentions that we will collaborate with this board. And so my goal is to collaborate more with you guys. And I've got a report before we go further that we're going to kind of look over the investments that were made. But if you look at the legislation, it says that we are going to strategically invest in workforce from incumbent workers, from students to incumbent workers. It says that this board is going to oversee the apprenticeship program. And as I told you in the first meeting, we were trying to expand apprenticeship into a lot of different sectors to sort of help meet this workforce need. And one of the on our one pager that you see is something that was very important to us, and we made a lot of leeway before the COVID pandemic hit. It's an industry-led sector review. So we have done three sectors so far. We have gone around, we have gotten folks just like you, some of them former board members, to look at HVAC programs, machining and manufacturing programs, and then our trucking industry. And some of the results, quite frankly, were not pretty. We are to report that to the education, the Joint Committee. We have not done that to this point, but we do have those reports ready. I think it's important for you guys to be a part of those sector reviews and decide what we want to look at next in terms of strategically, where do we need to invest in programs. I'll just tell you, when we did the sector reviews, we had folks from industry look at our community college programs. In some of the programs, particularly, I'll just call out HVAC. What our HVAC partners told us is after someone comes out of most of these programs, all they can do is be a helper on the truck. So they've gone to school for 2 years, and they don't have the skills necessary to troubleshoot, go to someone's home and troubleshoot a heat and air unit. They don't have the ability to install a heat and air unit. So we came up with some, out of that sector review, we came up with a sort of a standardized curriculum and equipment and training for all of our instructors across the state. We did a grant, it was around $65,000 each year to deliver that curriculum so that everyone has the same curriculum. And so that was a good thing that came out of that review. I'll tell you, in the trucking, when we did the trucking several years ago, we chose two places in the state to invest and modernize their diesel. And that was at ASU Searcy and at NWTI in Northwest Arkansas. Both of those programs are outstanding programs. Butch is not here. Butch Rice, one of our committee members, or our board members, he hires right out of that ASU Searcy program. And that was led by industry folks who basically said, take everything that's in here out. Take all these old tractors and trucks out. And we invested about $700,000 in each of those locations to bring that, to modernize that. Our former board member, Michael Garner, did the machining reviews for us. And one of the reviews that he did was right here in town at UA Pulaski Tech. And when he went in there, he was so critical of the program. They were so stunned by his remarks that they quite frankly wanted to call the governor. But they did not. And I commend them for that. They met with Michael afterwards and said, what do we need to do? And so as a result of all the things that they did and took the advice of Michael and other industry partners, last spring we invested $1.8 million at UAPTC to modernize and bring their equipment up to standards. Now, they're in the process of purchasing that right now, but they did everything Michael asked. So as a board member, when they came to me and said, here's our proposal, we need $1.8 million, the first thing I did was call Michael and say, is this the right time? Is this the right investment? Are these the right tools? And he said, absolutely. And his words were to me, they did everything I asked. I told them the worst things you could say about their program, about how they were delivering it, but they did. And so that's an example of what I want you guys to do. As we start moving forward, and you see something that we're doing, investing in, or you see something we need to invest in, we want that information from you. So having said that, I'm going to show you where we are today. We'll just pass this around. So if you look at that, if you look at our current investments that we've made year to date. We'll wait till everybody gets there. So we invest two different ways. We invest in individual companies through our workforce grants, and then we have these larger scale workforce projects. So in 2025, so far, we've committed $5.4 million. That's the top of the table there you're gonna see. We've invested in the Steelmaking Academy in Mississippi County. Along with Danny Gaines and Entergy, we've invested in Ozarka Construction Trades Program. The Forge Institute that you just saw, in addition to their fellowship, they still have $555,000 remaining of the original Shark Tank. You'll see, the next one is the Arkansas Community College Association and our broadband workforce. At our October meeting, they're going to give a report on the investments that we've made there and the number of folks that we have trained there. South Arkansas College, they are in the second year of their Shark Tank award to build a forestry program. Black River Technical is in the third year of their CDL project. We fund 100% of the cost of CDL licensing there, and they have a wait list. They have had a wait list for 3 years. The next one's kind of interesting. It's called Low Key Arts. It's a work-based learning project that we're doing with the Film Institute. So one of the things that we have a hard time getting investments for filmmakers to come to Arkansas because there aren't enough people to work in those industries for camera, grip, costumes, staging, all that kind of stuff. So we did, at the end of 2024, we invested $120,000 to train 30 folks in that industry. And so now they're all working on projects. Some of them are film projects, some of them are commercials, but they're all in the film industry, and we are funding that work-based learning at $4,400 per trainee for this final $132,000. That's a little bit different from the kind of things we do, but it's something that we see the ROI in that by people coming into the state. The folks that came in and actually trained these people in the film industry were from California and on the West Coast. And they think that they got two projects just based on those folks coming to Arkansas for the 4-week training. So hopefully we'll receive some ROI there. The next project is the Springdale School District Heavy Equipment. This was a $700,000 commitment that we made. They are employing, in the spring, they had 52 seniors that went to work in the construction industry. And a lot of these are Marshallese students. At this particular school, they have someone that they have named as the workforce director. I don't know of a high school in the state that has a workforce director except Springdale. And this fellow works at the Don Tyson School of Innovation, and he gave us a proposal that if he could purchase this $700,000, he could put more students into these construction jobs. So I look to see that double or possibly triple next year in terms of putting students right to work. And they were good jobs. I think the average was $21.70 per hour. These are high school seniors.
Stephanie, I'm curious, I'm just wondering if Jacob and Ross, that's ever crossed your radar screen. Is that news to you regarding Springdale?
I know about Springdale.
Yeah, we're up there.
The next one is Conway Regional Health System. You'll remember last meeting I told you about the Align grants that we have for linking nurses into industry. Conway Regional applied for that. They did not qualify because they were not a post-secondary institution doing training. What they do is they put 33 resident physicians through training last year. And their ask was to put in a sim lab to help their physician residents. Because if you're a physician resident in a small rural area, you're doing a lot of what nurses sometimes do. You're sewing people up, you're taking care of wounds. And so they proposed having us invest in their sim lab. So this is a case where when I got this, I got three proposals, actually asks from medical people, and I gave it to Kat Hamilton, who is one of our board members. She's on the Zoom. And I got her advice, and two of the proposals, she said that's not really training, but she felt like this was a good ROI for the state because of the work that they're doing in resident physicians. So excited about that. My associate director and I got to go visit Conway Regional, and we got to tour and see a lot of what they're doing. Very exciting. The next is also a medical, which is the National Park College. One of the problems with our clinicals is very few hospitals are doing obstetrics anymore, so you can't get clinicals for that. So many colleges are asking us to invest in birthing suites so that they can do that in a simulation environment. And this was a $220,000 ask. Again, the Healthcare Association, our other partners, it's become a need. Hugh, you'll remember when we met with the healthcare folks, that's what they started out with, was women healthcare, mothers, maternal health was a huge need in the state. It's also a huge priority of the governor's office. So really proud to, and you're probably going to see a couple more of those in the coming year. The next one is the Little Rock School District Metro Technical Center. They were not able to take advantage of the Align project because they're partnering with a private healthcare person, which is Baptist Health. And higher ed wasn't able to get that approved for concurrent credit in time. So we're going to invest state dollars in this. And I just want to make mention here that this high school LPN program through accredited schooling is about a third of what our public schools are. And so that is interesting to me. So over the next 2 years, I really am excited to see, and Cody's going to talk about some higher grants where we have some private educators. I'm anxious to see the outcomes from private versus public, because it seems like it's more efficient just if you look at the budgets alone. And I know there's a lot more to it than budgets. So that's just something interesting.
So this is a high school LP.
Yes, this is for high school students. So they get their diploma in May, and then at least by the end of that summer, under this program, they're required to take their NCLEX to become licensed as a practical nurse. And that's a goal that we want all of our centers to do. And we have a little over half of them now, now that Metro has signed on. So really, really excited about this. And then the final thing that I've committed is ACDS, which is apprenticeship. They're now doing business as apprentice. This is only one half of the year. They've applied for the federal ARPA funding. So we're going to fund them through December, and possibly we'll be able to leverage federal funds for the rest of the year. But then if you go down where you see the pending awards, so there's your 5.4. We know we're always going to invest in Associated Industries of Arkansas. Just be proud. I have told them that this year I've reduced their funding just a little bit to $2 million from $2.3 million last year. And that's to operate two trucks. And then that's also their draft days where they connect the seniors with employers. So that's a $2 million investment that we've committed to them to make every year. I expect that our transfer virtual reality training and exploration will remain pretty close to what it's been the last 2 years, which is $1.3 million. I've met with ACEF, and I don't know if you're familiar with them, Jeff, but they're doing pre-apprenticeship. And so, again, this is going to be an outcome-based funding model. So they will receive $2,000 per trainee, up to 150 high school students. So this is a 72 hours after hours in the evenings where students come and they are able to front load their apprenticeship training. And NCCER, they do a lot of, they do some heavy equipment, they do carpentry, they get them ready for employment. And I've heard from several employers that they're very pleased with this. So this is our first time investing with them. Looking forward to that.
Are they doing the certified pre-apprenticeship that you
are? They are not. They are not. And interestingly, they had gotten TANF funding for this last year, and it was difficult for them because not all of the students meet those TANF requirements. So they asked us to fund it this year, and so we'll do it. I'll do $1,000 in the fall, up to 150 students, and $1,000 in the spring, up to 150 students. And then Skills to Launch, many of you are familiar with that. That's another Shark Tank award, and it's probably one of our most successful programs. So Skills to Launch it's a 10 to 12 week program. It's bringing folks maybe second chances. Some of these folks are homeless, and they give them training. They get to choose. It can be welding. It can be construction. It can be IT. It can be solar. And they go directly into the workforce after this very intense 10 to 12 week program. We actually pay, we reimburse them for stipends as well. They have a graduation every year that I've had the privilege to go to, and I've never left there without tears. And at the last graduation, parents came up to me and they just, they really commended the state on investing in this, because what they said is, our son needed a second chance, and he was headed for prison, but he got involved in this program, and he found his peers and he found his people, and he was going to work as a welder, making about $20 an hour, and they had thought that he would be either living with them or in prison. And so they were literally crying. It's something I'm really proud of. That is another outcome base. So we do not reimburse that until they finish the program and show their employment. And it's like 92% placement is what Erin has been doing. Erin Stanger, if any of you are familiar with her. So that brings another $4 million commitment. So now if you'll, $9.4 million, plus I have $4.5 million outstanding from commitments that I made in 2024, which if you will recall, I told you about UAPTC, which is still sitting out there at one point, almost $8 million. We also invested, in addition to what we did with Entergy, we already had committed around $200,000 to Ozarka to build the building. And so there's still some outstanding there. UAFS has a marketing. They requested funding for marketing their robotics and manufacturing programs in the state. NWTI still has almost $2 million outstanding on the ammonia refrigeration building. I'm going there Thursday at 11 a.m. And we're going to tour that. There's now a project manager overseeing that to see. This has been an ongoing project since 2017. And we think this is finally the end. So the project managers told me that there's enough to see. So I'm going on Thursday to tour and assess the situation there. Newport Economic Development, that's another project that we've done with Entergy. And that is for, if you haven't been to Newport and seen, what's that called? The Tech Depot. Tech Depot. They're doing a lot of great workforce training there. And that was an original $100,000 commitment. So we still have $50,000. You just heard from Forge about the SkillBridge program. I still have $225,000 outstanding there. The NWA Council in Northwest Arkansas have $175,000. They have the invoicing, but they don't have the reporting to me on who got hired. So that's sort of the trick. I could reimburse a lot of these folks all day long. The problem is that they don't have the outcomes for me, and they get a Dear John letter from me that says, I can't fund you any longer until I get some reporting. So, and we lovingly refer to it as the John Deere. Cody always calls it the John Deere letter. It's a Dear John letter. And then the last thing is Creative Institute. They do some work making and graphic design. Have a little bit left over there. So if you see now, right now I have outstanding commitments of almost $14 million, and I have $23 million appropriation. And we haven't even talked about expansion of apprenticeship on our own business OSD loan or grants. So I don't have a lot more to commit to this year. I have some, we do have some commitments to the Department of Education for the adult diploma program, which is $1.5 million. So at this point, we're going to start being particularly strategic in our investments. And so at this point, I'm really going to look to you when I have these asks to say, what do you think? What are these? Should we move forward? Should we defund? All of our MOUs say that if we don't have outcomes, that we can, with 30 days notice, we can nullify the agreement. So I want to say one more thing, and then I'm going to let Senator English say whatever she wants to say to this board. We had the privilege of taking a group from the Little Rock Chamber to Alabama this week, and our board member Jeff was able to attend. Kevin was supposed to go, but we did it at the first of the month when he had all of his reporting to do, so he wasn't able to go. Because of the fund balance that we have with the skills fund, we have blocked a large amount of money to look at investing in a statewide project to do manufacturing training. And Cody and I have made several trips to Alabama. Hugh got to go with us on a trip. And so we wanted to take some of our local employers to take a look and see if that's something that they would be interested in the state investing in. And so, Jeff, I'll just let you say what you saw and what you think the benefits to you as an employer and to the state would be.
I think a couple of things stood out. I mean, the facilities were top notch, which were great because they obviously help with recruiting if it's a nice place to come and learn. But also it seemed that they did a really good job of tailoring the offerings of classes and training to what's the need of the industry of that particular state. You know, everyone varies a little bit, so they did a good job of really staying in tune with the market that they're dealing with. The other thing that stood out was just from the flexibility of the space. Obviously, you're getting skilled upskill training for your current employees, but it's a pretty big attractor for other groups coming to look into the state. If they provide that there at no cost to any of the organizations within the state, that was pretty impressive. And then lastly, really the commitment to the state to funding that appropriately. That was kind of shocking to me that was the case, because I didn't know that going into it. But they've got a fair amount of money set aside to maintain that appropriately, so that it's fully funded and works as it should, so that you've not just built something that's great but then doesn't carry on in perpetuity. And so they've really done a good job of, again, making sure they're molding it to what's needed for industry and manufacturing, but then funding it appropriately so that it can be successful. Great project.
And since our education partners in the room, one question that always comes up is, would a state-run training center, would that would it be competition for our community colleges that are right here in Central Arkansas, particularly UAPTC and UNCC Morrilton, where they do great training? I don't believe it would. And if you look at in Alabama, the community college is literally right across the street. So we would still know that students would be going to our community colleges and they would be getting this foundation. But once they get employed by, the manufacturers all over the state, no matter where you are in the state, you can come. All of their trainings are 32 hours. So it's 4 days, eight hours a day of training. And you can get certified in FANUC and in ABB at no cost to employers. And so because, and we would have to do the same thing as the state, they have that funding sustainability. They're constantly upgrading their equipment, which is where community colleges always have a hard time keeping up with the technology to maintain business and industry training needs. So it's something that we haven't gotten the go-ahead to move forward, but we are still gathering all the information that we can from folks around the state, our partners who would utilize it, and just wanted to make the board aware of that. Tony, do you want to add anything?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'll just say, I mean, I think Stephanie could help give a good overview. The one thing I would mention that I've taken away a little bit every time I've been there is, you know, to your point, Alabama made it for Alabama, right? I mean, they have Mercedes, who has 6,000 employees and 2,000-plus robots within the region, and not to mention some of the others. And so when you look at their offerings, it's very tailored to robotics. Vanek, ABB, Motovan, KUKA, all the things you see in those different facilities. We want to, you know, I love the phrase that Stuart Walton gives sometimes when they're talking about Northwest Arkansas, right? When they say we don't want to be the best Austin or the best this or the best that. We want to be the best version of ourselves. And so I think for us specifically, as we look to continue this discussion with employers and with agencies and with obviously the governor's office of, is this something we want to do? You know, is how do we best tailor that to what our needs are, back to what Jess was saying. Does that mean we have robotics? Probably. Does it mean we have CNC mills and lathes? Most likely. Does it mean we have some layer of focus around industrial maintenance where we're training people for hydraulics, pneumatics, PLCs, motor controls, and all these things? Yeah, I think so. And so I think that's one of the things that we wanted the employers to take away from our trip last week was, don't look at this as this is what we're set out to do. We want to make you aware of what the vision is and then help us collectively build that vision out and understand what the needs are. We see grants and have seen grants for years and years and years where we're sending people to Michigan, we're sending people to North Carolina, we're sending people to Alabama to get trained on these pieces of equipment and on this machinery. And we're subsidizing that expense us to our companies as a part of doing business here in the state of Arkansas. We're going to continue to do that as part of the skills development program. But for us, we look at it and we say, well, why do we extend those dollars outside the state when we could have people centrally located, training here, staying in Arkansas hotels, eating at Arkansas restaurants, and really just building up our economy in a much more robust way and keeping those training dollars in state versus sitting on out of state. So, you know, those are some of the things that I think about every time I go down there. One of the comments that was made as well was from one of the employers who said, you know, hey, we have people that work on second and third shifts as well, and are their schedules and their lives are built around that, you know. The way that you all do it requires them to come here from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., right? And so what accommodations do you all make for companies in that scenario, right? And honestly, the temperature was kind of just like, it is what it is, right? You come from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And that's how they choose to do it, right? But I think our perspective would be, if that's a need and there's economies of scale and we need to be able to figure that out, then either A, how do we leverage a local two-year college? Or B, if we have the means to be able to do it, then we're going to make ourselves available to make sure that we're providing that too for companies in that same area. So, you know, to another point, I mean, they funded at about $55 million across AIDT on an annual basis. That's a huge budget that they've committed to. But whether you're talking about Alabama or Georgia or some of these other states that really do a lot of the stuff very well, they've been doing it since the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, you know, and we're starting to get our feet in the water a little bit. So I think, you know, you have to crawl before you can walk. But I'm really excited about where we're headed. I'm excited about the conversations that have taken place with local employers and amongst members of this board, both in the past and present. And I think that it's part of our vision is just to how do we prepare a better workforce for companies that are currently doing business in the state than those that are looking to locate here. So
I'll add one more layer on top of this. The way I look at it, it's sort of a twofer from a workforce development perspective as well as economic development perspective. What Alabama does, and Cody's right, I mean, we're not going to copy Alabama. We're going to copy their good ideas. But we'll shape it. The goal is to shape it for Arkansas employers. You're the customer. And when we have economic development prospects come to town, whether they're located in Northwest Arkansas, Southwest Arkansas, they eventually come to the park, and we want them to take them to a facility where they can see that like they do in Alabama, and that facility is really dedicated to incumbent worker training, at no cost to employers, and it's pretty amazing. Some of the feedback that we've got, or that Alabama has told us, that because of that facility, they've chosen to locate in Alabama. We've gone through a tremendous amount of internal realignment within Commerce and the DWS. We've broken that out. Cody's organization that includes all the workforce development execution is going to be part, is under Cody's responsibility. We're about ready to talk about moving some workforce training related activities that are part of AEDC, part of Cody's organization. So there is existing resources actually budgeted, appropriated, and we're realigning them within Commerce to be able to operate a facility like this. Now, we're still trying to figure out what the total cost of that facility would be in terms of building it and operating it, but we're aligning ourselves to be able to maximize the existing appropriations that we have. Still have to ultimately convince the governor that this is an investment we've got to make. We all have to do that. But anyway, it brings us to another level in terms of our economic development capabilities, as well as workforce development.
Secretary, I'm sorry I may have missed this, but if Arkansas were to build it, what would be the top couple of priorities that would be within those job functions that we would like to train?
You mean in terms of the functional jobs? Yeah, it's really what the employers say, but we really want to make it around automation. For us to be successful, 14% of the state's payroll is manufacturing payroll. I think 11 or 12% of our employees are the manufacturing sector. For us to keep that sector healthy, those employers want to continue to automate. We want to invest in automation. So we want to have our incumbent employers to be able to send their employees for a week, 32 hours, or whatever it takes in training, whether it's back shift, day shift, whatever, to be able to upskill their employees on automated type machinery. And I would expect there'll be some kind of robotics, there'll be some CNC machinings, additive, subtractive, but it's all about making our manufacturing base more competitive so we can keep
all public funding in Alabama?
Yes.
And you think the price tag would be the same amount here, more or less?
Just my thoughts on this.
Remember, they have three really big facilities.
Well, and actually, so just to peel this back a little bit, so they built their first facility in 2009. They added on in like 2012, and then they built a third building on the same campus in about 2019. And so then they also have a training facility in Montgomery. They have one in Birmingham, and they also have one that focuses 100% on maritime welding in Mobile. If you've ever gone and drove to Destin or down to Florida, you've looked off to your right, and you'll see the maritime welding training facility that's operated by AIDT. And so collectively across those facilities, they employ north of 150, I think, and they have a $55 million budget that's allocated through public school funds through the state of Alabama. That's how they've chosen to do it.
They still have multiple units as well.
They do. They do, but they're not as robust, in my opinion, as kind of what, and because we actually walked through one the other day, and I always envision it being like a Be Pro, Be Proud trailer, but set up for actually training needs. But they still operate them, and they still go drop them off at company sites and things like that. But The other thing is, too, is they actually will go and build a training facility and man it on the company site that's doing an economic development project. Again, but you're talking about, you know, Mercedes or Toyota Mazda, who's started with 1,000 jobs and then added 1,500 more and then added 2,000 more. And so they've made those investments there, too.
Keep in mind, Alabama's been doing this since the 70s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we're not, we got to walk the right we can run. And so our budget wouldn't be anywhere near what they're talking about now.
Can I ask a question about that? So, given the upcoming investment of ARPA funds and state dollars through the hired grants for the regional strategic focus centers, that many of them are advanced manufacturing focused with automation, the forestry, and all that. Would there be any consideration to maybe, once those are established, to consider those separate sites that are already being, you know, built with our state dollars and the ARPA funds? Would that be a consideration, or is it just strictly having one central location for all of it?
I think when we're looking at those applications, we've got to look at them with what we're thinking about the central location. You know, I don't want us to have, we can't afford to have five different robotics, world-class robotics training centers across the state. We've got to, instead of having 15 mediocre centers of mediocrity, we need to have one or two centers of excellence. And they'll be in different locations based on, you know, where the regional workforce needs are. You know, steel would be, the steel focus is going to be in Northeast Arkansas. Lithium will be probably in Southwest Arkansas. It may be all over the state. But, so I think without, I don't want to put a pin in the commitment, Tina. Because we've got a lot of work to do looking at those detailed applications, but I think we ought to look at them, keeping in mind with where we'd like to go as a state, in a broader strategy with this automation center. It doesn't mean that wouldn't happen in some of those. There could be. Aligned training that's consistent with, we got to get into the details there, figure it out.
I call this a working lunch meeting. So does everyone want to grab a lunch and a drink, and then we'll reconvene here in just about 10 minutes once everybody gets their lunch, and everybody can keep eating and we'll keep moving on. But I want everybody to just got a couple more things.
Say thank you to Secretary Levin, Secretary Clinton for being here. This is the first time we've ever had three secretaries at the same meeting.
Will it take all about it? All the
ham.
One in the same direction.
She's my ham plant.
Really important to the board. Tremendous out there, but we've also got $100 million over the next 6 months where they're targeted. So it's a good thing. See that, and we'll share the detail after the patients come in. And how many of this is going to be breaking out by sector? There's I have planned here sometime.
I think that's
set it here. Economic development, targeted industry spread.
Put it on there for a time.
I'm there. There it is. Yes, it's been a little while. Yes, it happens.
I know. Super. So I'm telling you.
We may have said this while we were there. 32 hours to get to that work.
I'm there trying to hear.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you going to be our broadcast person?
We'd love to. I know they're coming in October, and I'd like to kind of see it, put my hands on it before that if I can. So I'll reach out to staff and we'll see it. I don't even know whether they're there.
Well, you know, we started out, Cody and I pulled the employers and the ISPs together.
Right.
And said, you know, coming down the road, we need to think about and so we set up that
But it's launched. Are they doing? Do you know where they're doing?
Morrilton and Costa and Saline County. I'm not sure that the tower thing is going in well.
Okay.
There aren't as many people in the tower.
Well, I drive past Saline County.
I haven't seen the tower
all the time, and I get past Morrilton.
Yeah.
So I may reach out to Stephanie and see if I can run by that. Yeah, I have to look.
So you know, a big part of the federal feed program for the implementing this, all this, a lot of it. But it's not just fiber. It's
For $1 billion
it's very complicated.
Yeah,
I got a lot of good things.
Well,
long time no see. Mm-hmm. You still got that difference.
I still take a picture.
They're going to let you take it off.
29, you got the Bible last of it. My appointment, I think, with the
doctor. Good.
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 Thank you for sending me that stuff the other day. He was trying to do all the bugs. I'll look into it. I haven't had a chance to get it.
But you know what, other ground coming around.
Yeah.
Something we'll talk about.
She sticks the plants there on the ground.
Yesterday, I mean, he just said, "Are you going to work with me tomorrow?" I said, "Yes." And I had Trump in the table, and I was like, "I need you to go." I knew the charter was going to be short. Okay.
You guys just go have it on the
still, it's still our biggest one. I mean, it's here in Little Rock, let's go to say. Down there.
So was it Lynch Christmas?
Think of the one I don't need.
No, that's different. It's not. You guys, we're in the old one. I think it's good.
See, that's a lot of work.
They're
not in there.
Great.
Then I guess when
sister or cousin,
that's her one and only.
One and only.
All right, guys, we're going to resume the meeting. Our next agenda item is going to be Mr. Cody Waits. If we could turn it over to you.
Yes, sir.
Well, it's all yours.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm actually going to pair it to Tina Moore. No, I'm just kidding. We're talking about hire grants, so I'm just going to turn it over to you. No, but in all seriousness, first and foremost, you know, it's been such a collaborative effort from the very beginning, how this all came together. Oh, thank you. Yep. You know, and just the partnership, can't say enough, from, you know, leadership top down from both the secretaries, commerce and education, all the way down to higher ed, K-12, OSD, workforce connections, and the entire bunch, just the collective, you know, partnership that we put together. The launch, no pun intended, from our other efforts that are going on in the state, the hire grants. And so I'm never big on acronyms as it relates to HIRED, but HIRED means Higher Industry Readiness Through Education Development. And so for those of you who may not be as familiar with it, you know, what we're talking about here is basically $88 million over the next 5 years that are going to get invested. $48 million of which is going to come through the Department of Commerce through what we're naming as Track 2 grants, which is going to have to be awarded, committed by the end of the year, and then ultimately expended within 2 years. Similarly, with the Department of Education through the Division of Higher Ed, their $40 million is part of their regional workforce grant process, which is going to be $40 million to be expended over the next 5 years or so through not just these year one awards, but also through continuation funding. And so I'll certainly allow them to speak about their efforts and their side of the house and correct anything that I may mess up along the way. But, you know, we started this conversation a few months back around how we were going to leverage some of the federal funds that were made available to us to really make, you know, strategic investments, kind of back to what Stephanie was saying, into the Arkansas workforce. And it goes along with the governor's workforce development strategy and the creation of focus centers. And so everything that we're working on here aligns with those focus centers. And so again, you have Track 1 and Track 2 grants. One of the things that I found very interesting was Tina and myself really presented on what these hired grants were through an RFP process and just kind of talked through the whole scope and structure. And that was, I think, I can't even remember the timeline, but it was sometime in June, I believe. And then we gave partners across the state basically a 2-week deadline, which was bumping up against the 4th of July weekend. And on the day of the submissions, we had about 40-something, maybe 50-something grants that are letters of intent that had been submitted. And so that was kind of step one was, hey, listen, attend this webinar, learn about what it is we're doing, learn about what we're focused on, what we're not focused on, and all the pieces that were required within this effort. And then, oh, by the way, you got 2 weeks to put it together and submit it, right? And so we're under some time frames and constraints that we have to operate by, so is everyone else. So again, on the day of submissions for the letters of intent, we had roughly 40-something, 50 that morning. And by the end of the day, we had 147, 150 applications or letters of intent. So I think it just goes to show you there is interest, there is demand, and there are a lot of people who are looking to try to do some really unique and innovative projects across the state. One of the things I would mention is as we went through that LOI process, we had essentially a group of us that was made up of Tina and Ken Warden, Secretary McDonald, Stephanie, myself, who am I missing?
Mike
Roger, and Randy Zook. And we sat down for a couple of times and looked through every single one of these letters of intent. And not only did we do it once, but then we actually got together again here at Commerce and sat here till about 9 o'clock one night.
Over pizza,
and really work through the remaining LOIs that we had not gotten to yet. And as you can tell, we started at about 5:30. We went until 9 o'clock that night, and it was just a really robust process that we went through in terms of trying to figure out which letters of intent move forward, which ones do not, which ones can we look to, hey, you should partner with each other where there is alignment. There were a number of applications that were submitted by one entity or another that we said, you know, it doesn't necessarily make sense for them to not partner here. Why would they not partner? They're in the same region. They're working on the same sector, or these two things should go together as opposed to being two separate applications. So we gave some of that feedback to them, and obviously that went really well. One of the things I thought was funny that everyone will probably in the room agree that was there was after 9 o'clock happened and we all said, all right, we feel good, let's go. Ken Warden says, should we go through them one more time? And we said, no, I think we've got it. So anyway, what you're talking about is about $220 million that were requested in terms of the actual through the letters of intent. And after it was done, out of those 147 or so applications, we had about 47, just under 50 letters of intent that were approved to move forward. And, you know, I think that's something that, you know, you look at 10% of the actual letters of intent that were submitted versus approved to go to the next phase. I think that's really a unique and a really good number. And when I mentioned that there was 220 million, really that's what was approved to move forward to the next phase. That was what was originally submitted. But of that, 157 million of that is Track 2 funding, which is going to come through the Department of Commerce.
And so that accounts for about 45 grants, or no, I'm sorry, 45 grants total. How many were actually?
I think there's 23 of, that we had through.
23?
Track two.
I have, in my notes, I have 16 track one, 22 track two, and four that were due graded funding from track one.
So 147 down to 45 and roughly $157 million that we're going to be looking at. So again, we looked at this from a perspective of focus areas as part of the governor's workforce strategy, really looking at advanced manufacturing. There's a number of things that go within that, whether it's aerospace, defense, firearms, industrial maintenance, steel, energy, infrastructure, and utilities, emerging technologies and sectors such as lithium, semiconductors. When you're looking at IT, we're talking artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, data sciences, bioinformatics under this life sciences aspect, logistics, distribution, skilled trades, precision ag, and those were really kind of the areas that we focused on. A lot of the sectors or the submissions that were not approved forward, you know, there's a lot of people that ask, well, why are you not focusing on broadband? Why are you not focusing on healthcare? Why are you not focusing on some of these areas? Albeit important from a healthcare perspective, we had just invested 20-something million dollars through the Align grants, and so we felt like we had really put some dollars towards healthcare. Broadband, when you look at the funding that's being made available through BEAD, which the state has a large sum of money on, we've been working with Glenn Howie in the state broadband office on an allocation of funding from that to be directly towards workforce development. So we didn't want to focus on some of those areas. And so we can't be all things to all people, back to our conversation earlier. So these were the areas that we focused on. And so there were some applications obviously turned away because of that. When you're looking at the track one grants versus track two, track one was really focused on you had to be an institution of higher education, at that, a public institution of higher education, I do believe. On the track two side, that's coming through commerce, it really was any players that are a stakeholder in workforce, whether you're a business, chamber of commerce, economic developer, association, nonprofit. We wanted to try to open it up to make it as broad as possible so that organizations could partner and collaborate and identify who the best person would be or the best organization would be to submit those funds. What we run into a lot with the federal government is, hey, the organization that's the best fit for this grant can't always be the lead applicant. So you're forced to try to figure out how does that work and who manages the money. So at the end of the day, and obviously we have an action item I think we need to get to. So I'm going to kind of tie it up here shortly. What you see on the map here is something that we had put together that really just highlights, you know, what the targeted industry sectors were and where the grant applications that came through were from. And so, you know, this is just kind of a holistic view across the state. So you can see there's heavily in Central Arkansas, heavily in Northwest Arkansas, where you had a number of applications. A lot of those were University of Arkansas, Fort Smith, UA Fort Smith had a few, Central Arkansas had a number. And then you see a spattering of applications that were submitted from a lot of two-year colleges, four-year universities, but also a lot of business organizations and industry associations as well. When you look at, and I know you can't see this, so we'll make sure we email this out to you all so you have it. But this is just all the lead applicants, locations, as well as the targeted industry broken down a little deeper than advanced manufacturing. So we did this for every single focus area, kind of focus center that we wanted to target, whether it was emerging tech, energy and infrastructure. You can see where those grants came from. IT, who those lead applicants were, and obviously exactly what they were trying to do. So we wanted to do this in terms of, hey, let's look at from an LOI perspective, what does it look like visually from all LOIs that were submitted? We're waiting the second round of these maps, and I'll identify those that were approved to move forward. And then ultimately what you'll see is the final list of those that were actually approved. So we're kind of in the phase two part of this right now, where on the higher ed side, they have planning grants that are actually in process right now and moving through. And so we did not allow for a planning phase on our side. We just didn't want to put those dollars towards that. We felt like they're doing this and these organizations were all aware of it. So we didn't want to put the $25,000. I think that's the number towards planning grants. So right now, the organizations that were approved for track two, their next kind of phase of this project is to submit it sometime by the end of September. And so that's a pretty quick turnaround time for a lot of these organizations. And so we're really appreciative of the fact that they've kind of they've heard the bell and they're answering the call in terms of getting these things in. We're actually working with all of the organizations that applied. So if they have questions or comments or concerns or just want to better identify what the budget looks like, what we're interested in, how should certain things look over the next few months, That we're having one-off conversations in higher ed doing the same thing. We're having collective conversations with those grants that are kind of combined into both tracks. I mean, Stephanie and I probably have 5 or 6 meetings this week with organizations that are submitting these applications. And so, again, September, at the end of September is the deadline for us. We have to have kind of a negotiation period where we're going to work with those organizations to right-size those applications. And if we're going to award funding, kind of have that negotiation in place. We're going to make these notices of award and these announcements sometime in November. And then we have to have MOUs executed by no later than December 15th is what our deadline is. We have to have them executed and agreed upon and out the door no later than December 31st, 2020, whatever this year is, 2024. And then they have 2 years to spend the funds. So with that, I'll let anybody else around the table make any comments they want.
I just want to say the reason I wanted the list to be in front of each of you, if you look at that list and you say, I want to be a part of that, please reach out to me. I can give you the lead applicant. A lot of these folks, let me just say, they need your advice. They need your help. If you look at some of the asks on there, if you look at what they're trying to do, the ones that I meet with, the first thing I'm always bad cop, I would say this, but I would say, how are you going to spend $4 million in 2 years? So let's, you know, they need your advice on the that's needed for this. And some of the emerging technologies, they're just going to be building the foundation. We don't know in some of the emerging technologies what we need. And so maybe they don't need as much money, but they do need to, they do need the advice of industry partners and to tell them maybe what you believe the best investment is to get ready for the future. So I encourage you to look at the applicants. See if you think that there's someone in your organization that could be an SME for them. And work with them on this because this we've got $48 million. We can do some big things in 2 years with federal money, and I really want to make this count.
Thank you. I'll just add that one of the premises of all these grants was businesses really and the educational institutions working together in partnership. We wanted business industry to drive it, and we're not there yet because we've gotten some comments, requests from some well-known higher education institutions in the state to, hey, could you send me some list of employers? So we're not there yet, but we've really got to have that partnership going forward. And I would also like to just commend that the private sector described makes all common sense, but I've been told Ken Wharton, Tina, you've been involved in this for a long time, that Ken says that he's never been a part of a collaborative process like this between Commerce and Department of Education, higher ed, since he's been here. So the collaboration, the partnership has just been awesome. Tina, your work has been fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah. So you took the words out of my mouth. I was actually going to say, you know, a lot of this wouldn't have happened without Tina Moore. So if y'all don't know her, take the time to meet her today. Yeah. But done a lot of great work for this, and so we appreciate you for that.
Well, you've had to see so many emails. I'm pleasantly surprised that you still even talk to me. and I would also add additional layer, the partnership with Mike Rogers. That's been very helpful for me on the track ones when I'm meeting with them without the Commerce folks for our one-on-one calls. I bring the logistics piece of the higher ed side and the programmatic part, and Mike's able to talk about pneumatics and CNC machines and all the things that are not within my wheelhouse. So it's really been complimentary for all of us to work together.
The only other thing I would mention is, and I don't know kind of what our ending is on this, but, you know, if any of you are interested in being a part of the review of these applications, I think we might open that up to a board member to be a part of that, you know, process. Similar to what we did in the past when we had the Shark Tank, you know, that we kind of ran, which, you know, the board essentially, you know, had these people come in and provide these deals. Obviously, this is more of an application, but if any of you are interested, I think we welcome your support and obviously participation in this.
If I could add to kind of piggyback, which I think this is great, is not everybody's working in silos and everybody's working towards a competition on what makes sense. And I always find it interesting, and I agree, Tina is taking a lead and kind of keeps me updated. I don't think they're really selling how many hours that they went above and beyond. This was not the easy approach. The easy approach is to put out an entitlement grant and say, here you go, have fun. I think the part that's interesting and center English, I'm sure you're going to hear this, is a lot of these institutions have a sense of entitlement that because they send in an application, they're automatically starting to plan on building a project. And the fact, like what Cody said, is we can't be everything to everybody, but we didn't just say no. We went back and said, you got to be more strategic, right? Like every institution is not going to be an expert in every program. So it was not even just a review process. It was a thoughtful response on how you can make your applications better.
Yeah.
But definitely get the calls from people that aren't happy that they just automatically thought they were getting money, and that's not how this is going to work anymore. And I think it's great. Some people need to be told no.
And it's what excites me is if you look at a map, I mean, you'll see the state's targeted industries from an economic development perspective, where its strengths of its industries are, and the workforce strategy of the governors, and then this list and how they dovetail. It's a first, so that's what's exciting.
And we'd be remiss if we didn't mention one other thing, and Cody may have said this and I just didn't catch it, but the higher ed funding, how he mentions a different set of funds because ARPA dollars are the commerce side, that's from the Workforce Initiative Act that I believe Senator English was part of. So that allocation every year, the $8 million to higher ed for this is based upon that legislation. And that is why we have the planning grant phase, because we are having to adhere to the legislative rules that are tied to that. And that's why we have that. But thank you, Senator English, for you and your colleagues making that be in perpetuity for us to continue.
You should have heard our discussion about planning grants.
I said that all along.
We compromised.
We did.
Well, just one last note, and then we can move on. But again, just highlighting on this visual that I think is really interesting, and you know, if you look at the South and the East, very well represented. And so, you know, it's not, you know, I mean, it is what it is, right? I mean, we see a lot of funds sometimes go to certain areas. And so I'm really encouraged by the vast distribution of where these projects came in from and organizations that got together across these different sectors. So, Stephanie.
All right. We have one more item, and this is an information item. And I'm going to turn it over to Derek, and while he's getting ready. So one of the things that the governor's office initiative that I love is that we, for every rule you add, you have to repeal two. And we're going to do even better. We're going to repeal four and make one big rule. We're going to eliminate about 20-something pages of rules at our next meeting. Assuming that we'll have the approval of the governor's office at that time, we will ask you to approve these rules. So I'll turn it over to Derek and let him explain.
Yes, as Stephanie was explaining, we had four sets of rules here that was basically governing our apprenticeship programs here in the state of Arkansas. We had first our registered apprenticeship rules. That's just in general, encompasses any of them. That's been, last time it was updated was 19. Our plumbing rules, they have not been updated since 2017. Of course, those are just for registered plumbing apprenticeship programs. Then we have in 2015, the last time the electrician rules were updated. Of course, those are just for electricians. And then we have our construction industry craft training education program. Those have been around since 1999 and never been updated. Of course, the CT aspect is, of course, where we provide reimbursement for teachers' books, code books, curriculum for students, equipment that can be utilized within the craft classroom. To help make the learning all together better. So we took these four sets of rules and combined them into one document. So we went from 42 pages down to 21 pages of rules. So eliminating all the duplication that's continually throughout it, clarified some things here and there that we needed. We added our pre-apprenticeship section in there now, so we'll actually have a pre-apprenticeship rule section based large part off of Mark McManus's pre-apprenticeship handbook for our self-certified pre-apprenticeship programs. So we added that. We also added in about pre-apprenticeship being allowed and that it's not a problem. People can get this for plumbers and electricians. The big thing there is with the way the rule was set up, it said, oh, hey, all your OJT, all your RRPI has to be done concurrently. So that was what I was hearing all the time. Hey, we can't do this. I'm like, well, okay, well, we changed the rule. You can do this now. So just to try to clarify it for them. We added that for the pre-apprenticeship component, for example, that first and foremost, it would automatic approval would be if it was an Arkansas certified pre-apprenticeship program. Of course, we would have already done our due diligence as a state and verified everything's working correctly, everything's on the up and up. And then we did add one little section or any other pre-apprenticeship program out there as long as OSD has the opportunity to review and approve it. So we want to make sure if we are allowing this pre-apprenticeship, this RTI hour to be able to come into a registered apprenticeship program, we want to be able to make sure that they're getting taught what they need. It's not just a bunch of garbage and then it don't really help them in the end. So we took those four sets and got them combined. Like I said, just added requirements, knocked down our pages here. So overall, I think it's going to be a whole lot easier for our apprenticeship program to be able to just take the one set of rules and they'll be able to have it and see everything. Everything from our traditional apprenticeship funding, our CT guidelines for construction training grants, all the way to the do's and don'ts of registered apprenticeship and our electrical and plumbing program. So
you have a rough copy in your...
We do have a copy that is in there. I am going to get sent to them. Made a few little. We had a special meeting just here earlier, so that's why I was late with our AACSC. Got that finally finalized and approved. Made a few little modifications in what you're seeing there in front of you. So we'll get that sent out to y'all so y'all can see that, the final there. But as Stephanie alluded to, you know, from here we'll be, sending it off to the governor's office for approval. And then hopefully everything work out where then we can get y'all approval by next time y'all meet in October.
We just wanted you to have some time to review it. If you have any questions.
Bug me. It's fine. Yeah.
And the next time we meet, we will ask you to approve it, assuming that the governor's office approves this. And our legal counsel will be sending that over hopefully this next week. And I just also want to say that this past month, we promoted Derek. He is now the director of apprenticeship. He has done a great job of coming up with a database. He keeps us all in line, and I can't say enough about the great work that Derek has done. So congratulations to Derek.
All right. Thank you. Thanks.
All right.
Well, that'll bring us to open discussion. And board members, anyone here that would like to bring anything up, we'd love to hear some input or ask a few questions. I'm actually going to start us off, if that's okay. Ross, I would like to open a brief discussion. May not be the perfect place or time to do this, but I would like to ask, and going back to the director's report, there's a comment there on Springdale High School District Heavy Equipment and the fact that they have a workforce director at their school. Can you speak a little on with high schools, you've got guidance counselors, you've got CTE directors. The hope that a high school student is positioned to go to work correctly, has the skills, leaning towards the right spots. Can you comment on how either CTE or CTE directors, and if the aspect of a workforce director within high schools is a good consideration? Is it something we might be able to help fund or encourage? Is that a potential path that high schools want to pursue?
So, I think the first thing you've got to consider with Springdale is it's
from the majority of our 250 plus high school, you know, school districts we have in the state, they're very unique. Obviously, they're our largest, so their resources are much more plentiful than the vast majority of our districts across the state. And in that role, when they kind of morphed and created it, you know, it's unique. It is definitely the one and only in the state. Now, when we talk about CTE directors or career technical education directors, so like at Cabot, you have a person on staff there at the district. Our larger district, so our probably 25 largest, employ a CTE director that oversees career technical education. Their goal is to coordinate with post-secondary and business industry in their region. But then the remaining, which is still 200 plus districts typically, are part of a consortium model. And so what that means is their CTE director works at a co-op, at one of our 15 education co-ops, and they kind of combine efforts that way, still with their district making key decisions, but collectively how it's worked in the state for a long time is that's kind of their point person with career technical education to be that connector with business and industry, and of course with the post-secondary partners as well. So back to, I think, part of the question too is, I mean, is there a drive or need for it? I think, you know, there could be, but at the same time, I think it's collectively ensuring that districts have a person that's kind of that point and lead to it. You know, I always find the time when I'm in front of high school principals to have that really intentional conversation with them that you have a lot of things on your plate, but, you know, economic development's a part of it and you're producing your future workforce. And so, like, what's your level of engagement in that process? And that just goes from my personal experience of sitting in that seat, like how that works, because I think for some of our smaller ones, it's that just being engaged and being part of, you know, the local chambers. Are we having conversations? Are we part of that? And I think it's a, you know, two-way door. You know, do they feel welcome and invited to be a part of those conversations? And then are they pursuing that as well and trying to engage? I think to the position Springdale has, I just think it's a very unique piece that exists there for their community. I wouldn't say that that model probably would work holistically across our state. And I think in larger districts, larger, more urban areas, you probably see more and more of that. We can use what's, you know, here specifically in Little Rock with their, you know, Ford MGL grant with the Academy model. And, you know, they employ Marcus Jewett at the Little Rock Chamber, but he coordinates between the Little Rock School District, Pulaski County Special School District, Jacksonville School District, and North Little Rock in there. Those four districts all coordinating together, and Marcus kind of is their point lead person on their business and industry connections to then the work they're doing there. You know, he's not employed by the school district, but he is spending probably 95% of his time working with those districts on that implementation, and that's a great model too, because it's working well for them, and I think you're seeing some of the fruits of their labor and the implementation side of that. So it's a very wordy answer to say, I don't know that it really is a perfect model, but I think, yeah. And then, of course, we have career coaches. And so, and that's been something that's been, you know, around for over 10 years in our state. It's gone through many iterations with the legislature kind of changing their purpose and goal. But in our current focus, we have 128 career coaches across the state. They're employed by post-secondary institutions or nonprofits. They're not employed by our school districts, but they're housed in our school district. And their purpose is to work with students on their goals and next steps, whether it's college, whether it's career, whether it's, we don't know. And, you know, we've been challenged to be in all 75 counties with those. And so I think we're at right around 62 at the moment and they're trying to get them into all 75. We have some private partners that have come on board to help us kind of close that gap as well. But I think there's a one-on-one conversation piece with our students around their goals. And then, of course, their big piece is to connect the business industry. So this past year, they came on board with the draft days. And so they're the ones that did all of the training with the students who went in for interviews prior to, like they were the ones who provided that versus the, you know, Be Proud hired an outside group to come in and train them. We used our career coaches across the state to continue to grow that. So, and there's that unique perspective that exists out there as well. And I think continues to grow. And we have some great opportunities to broaden that as well.
Okay. If I could add, no, that's okay. It says discussion, so this is where I can't be quiet.
We don't want you to.
Thank you. Ms. Isaac's given us an opportunity to do a little bit of an update on some of the stuff that we're doing, especially in the K-12 space, in alliance with CTE, some of the stuff that we're doing with Ross, and then articulation to the secondary opportunities, and some of it's driven by LEARNS and some of those requirements. So I think it'd be very helpful to provide an update But when you look at opportunity, this is kind of where we need to be more strategic. And this is why I like when Cody shared those maps to show that we're being more strategic on where we're putting our investments. Ross kind of alluded to, there's an economy of scale, and we don't like to talk about school districts being a business, but at the end of the day, there's only so much revenue, and there's only so much expenses, and there's so much that you got to do. You know, there's an economy of scale, so your larger school districts can provide maybe different, more staff that are singularly focused on meeting the needs of students in a particular area, where a smaller district has to rely on partnerships and cooperatives and collaborating. So I always like to chunk up everything by data, but 25% of the students in this state, 25%, one in four students attend one of eight school districts, right? So when you look at how do we roll it out as a state, 25% of the students are in eight districts. 32 districts, the top 32 districts control 50% of the students. So what those 32 districts do as far as producing educational outcomes and alignment literally touches half the state. And then when you get beyond that, it's just spread out all over the place. So 230 something districts, and when you look at scale and you get into that top 32, once you start getting under 3,000 or 4,000 students in a district, we got a lot of little people just trying to do the best of what they got. And this is where we're trying to get them organized and strengthen those collaborative partnerships. So I look forward to presenting an update on kind of where we are.
Superpose those 32 districts on that map and see where the gaps are.
Yeah. And when you look at like enrollment by county, which I think isn't what you'd be interested in, Chambers, I think it's Lee County is the only county with one school district in it,
right?
And so when you look at Pulaski County and how many students are in this county versus we were up in Mississippi County because they're pretty frustrated with some of the school outcomes. And I said at a state board meeting, I called their school board dysfunctional. That ran nothing but failure factories, so I got their attention. But what was neat is right after we made those comments, their chamber, Mississippi County Chamber, sent me a formal letter with all their business signed that says, we stand behind anything you want to do to fix these schools. So the business community wants better.
Of course.
And we're not talking to them. We need to ask, how are we building those relationships? So we had a community forum up there, and I won't call out the school district, but it's a tiny, small school district in an area that builds lots of steel. And there's probably 400 or 500 people that showed up to hear what we had to say to their school board.
Yeah, they're tired of having to rely on people from Tennessee and Missouri to support their workforce. And when something happens across the border, how does that impact that? Because they're not satisfied. Families aren't moving in that area, supposedly because of the districts.
And they have high-paying job and opportunities there.
And it's amazing you have Blytheville and you have Armorell. And Armorell's doing fine. I mean, it's the same, basically the same people. Yeah. But Blytheville is in the pits.
It's broken. But we're going to fix it. It won't be broken for long.
Danny, do you have something you wanted to speak back?
Yeah. I just wanted to call out just says a point of information. I know Stephanie referenced several Entergy grants. And just, you know, I was entertaining coming on the board, and I just kind of made sure with Stephanie that there wasn't going to be any conflict of interest. So I just want to disclose to you all that we have funds, Entergy has some funds that are residing with OSD. Under the prior administration, we had given some funding to ADE. The job training didn't get executed, so those funds were, Cody, keep me straight, reappropriated or redirected to OSD. So OSD is holding those funds, and then by MOU, OSD distributes those funds, including Ozarka and Newport. I'm sure
South Arc.
So we did try to the South Arc. I think we funded the steel making initiative prior to this. But so anyways, I just wanted to disclose, particularly to my fellow board members, I'll never vote where there's a conflict of interest or anything, but primarily just OSDs serve as the pass through for those dollars to fund. And of course the benefit is Stephanie tips us off for to good opportunities. Sometimes we say yes and other times we maybe not, but we've been very appreciative to be able to leverage our funds, and especially the due diligence that Stephanie and her team do with these organizations. So I just want to disclose that as a matter of transparency. If you ever have a question about my position or viewpoint on something, please raise it.
Energy is a great partner. They're just like us. They're looking for outcomes. When I call or if I give a report to Danny and there aren't outcomes, he says, let's stop. And we do. We stop funding. And so he's a great partner to him. Somebody else have any? I said I was going to turn the table over to you, Central English.
Me?
Is there anything you would like to say to this board? Because you and I talked for about an hour yesterday, and you really inspired me to really encourage this board. So,
well, I think one of the things that probably few people understand is why we even have this board. And if you're new to the board, you really don't understand. It goes back way. But probably 30-some plus years ago, I worked for the Department of Economic Development and Recruiting Industry in the state. And loved it. One of the things I had an opportunity to do was to spend a lot of time with our employers across the state. And one of the things that they kept, now this is 30 plus years, we can't find people to go to work. We can't find people that can read a tape measure. That's almost 40 years ago. So over the years, we've been talking about the same things over and over and over again. And we always say it has to be industry driven. Well, the reality is we never have been industry driven. So in 2013, we had a new administration, and I determined that what we needed was a board of industry people who represented industry sectors across the state, who could actually be that industry driven that we've always said we wanted to have. So we set up the organization, the board, and it has evolved a little bit over time, but it also set up the Office of Skills Development, which is our funding thing. So 25 years ago, something like that, the State Chamber of Commerce and the business community agreed to add 0.5% income tax on their corporate income taxes, in order to provide a pot of money to pay for training programs that they were directing. Well, that passed, but the money never came to the pot of money for industry to be, it was dispersed to your colleges, for your colleges, people like that. So at that same time we passed this legislation, we also passed a legislation that took above 26% of all of the corporate income taxes will go into a fund to be used for industry training. That really is industry driven. And as you can see, that's exactly what's happening with these dollars. So I'm pleased with both things. We need a very strong board. You are the industry representatives and hopefully the point person, Danny, for you and anything that has to do with energy. And Lynn, anything that you have to do with whatever. But we try to find people in manufacturing and logistics and transportation and healthcare so that we would have all those industries represented, but that you would be then the point person to be our industry. So when we do industry audits, we've done these industry audits, then there's a group of people that's coming together to do those things and making sure that those programs that we're investing in across the state actually are producing the kind of people that we want to have for the workforce. So I'm pleased with where we're going. We need more board members. We hope waiting for the governor to appoint more. But that's your role, is really to be the point person for your industry and to know what's going on in your industry and to be able to help us make those decisions about what the future looks like, what's really necessary. And, you know, obviously it's changing horrendously in the energy industry. We need to know that, because you don't make good decisions for education if you don't know what's happening out there in the world. So that's where we are.
Thank you, Senator. I'll speak for Senator.
Oh, I will say one thing. I want one more thing. I will tell you that out of everything, federal government does not look at outcomes. But one of the things that this group of folks does with these grant dollars, every single nickel has to be accounted for. And if there's not an outcome, people aren't getting their money. It's just that simple. And that's the way you are in your business. And that's the way we ought to be in state government. We just pass out too many dollars and there's no results. Nobody can tell you what happened to all that money. But that's not good with what Stephanie and Cody and this group have done. So I have to, could be more complimentary of what's going on.
Well, I have to comment on that then, because I, as a manufacturer, I enjoy seeing the connection between the economy and education and workforce and skills and y'all's involvement. So I definitely appreciate everyone being here and for the work that y'all do for Arkansans. But for us, for me as a manufacturer, you know, I enjoy working here and I enjoy seeing how some of these parts come together. Always be glad to offer an opinion. Sometimes not sure where that opinion needs to go or should it even be said, but thank you for saying that. That's very encouraging.
Good group.
Okay, good. Well, does anybody have anything else? If not, we will close on that. We'll adjourn that. Anybody would like to make a motion?
So moved.
Right. So, thank y'all for coming. I appreciate it. Good. Good.
Yeah.